Wherever you are in the world, thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Badminton Podcast, a community for badminton players, by badminton players, proudly brought to you by Velan. We talk all things badminton and aim to inspire you to be better in your game and in life by celebrating the people and stories of our global badminton community, whether they be past or present professional players, social players, officials or fans.
We're your hosts, Jeff and Henry, and we love badminton. From the bottom of our hearts, we'd just like to say thank you to everyone who has listened to, shared, and been part of the podcast. It wouldn't be possible without you all. If you do enjoy our episodes and can spare just a couple of dollars each month, you can really help keep the podcast going by supporting us on Patreon. Just visit www.patreon.com/thebadmintonpodcast. We'll leave the link in the description. On this episode of the podcast, I introduce you to Ruben Jeele. He's the number one men's doubles player from the Netherlands with a world ranking of 45 and a world ranking high of 36. His latest results include winning the 2022 Orleans Masters, and he was a bronze medalist in the 2022 European Championships.
To show your own potential, I think that's really important when you start to play with an older partner, that you are not collapsing in terms like, oh shit, I really have to play like this or like that, or he or her expects me to do this or that. I think if you do that, there's a reason they chose you, because they see some potential in you, and that's because you play a certain playing style, or it can be numerous things. But as soon as you really change and just think like, oh, I have to play this way or this way, that's maybe actually when you fail. Not once, but fail every time. So I think it's very important that as an older player, you have to comfort your partner that dare to play their own game and not only look up to you and think like, oh, you're so good and you're doing everything perfect and I suck at everything. And I think that's really important, that you have to believe in yourself. There's a reason you got the chance to play with this good player. So just show yourself and try to do as good as you can.
When he finishes badminton, he's set on being a wannabe golfer. Ruben, thank you very much for coming on to the podcast.
Thank you for being here.
We're happy to be here as well.
Yeah.
So just a bit of an icebreaker question. What is your go-to comfort food? So maybe you have like a tough loss or, I don't know, just having a bad day. What's your comfort food?
I would say maybe a pizza. Yeah. I think at the Orleans Masters, we played very late every evening. And even though we won every time, it's quite hard to get good food late at night. So we actually ordered a pizza almost every day. And it worked.
Yeah.
So we just kept doing it because we felt like, okay, this is our winning food this week. And it worked. So we went for that. But I would say a good pizza is always nice.
Mm-hmm. How would you define a good pizza?
Yeah.
Wait, does pineapple belong on a pizza?
No way. No way. Not for me, at least. Okay. Like, I respect it if people do, but not for me. I would say a good crust, good cheese, but not too thick.
Yeah.
Like, American pizzas are usually a bit thicker and they're like...
Spongy.
Very spongy. And I think a good Italian pizza is like very flimsy, actually, a bit. And just...
Like the air bubbles, the crispy air bubbles.
Yeah, that's important.
And like plain or like a margarita or like with meat or pancetta or...
Usually I like to have a few toppings, but not too many, actually. I do feel in Italy they also don't put beef on pizza, for instance. I think that's
no
not
chicken
usual.
Or,
that's not usual there. So I'd say it's just 1, 2, 3 toppings, apart from the mozzarella, cheese and the tomato sauce then. Mm-hmm. That's perfect for me.
Great.
I'm in a food podcast here. Awesome.
And for those who are listening, we are coming live. We're in person with Ruben and we're at Papendal, where the national program is for the Dutch badminton team. And we've been eating together at the food hall. There was one day where there was pizza. It wasn't actually too bad, but what do you think about the food at the food hall here?
Tough question. No, I actually love the lunch. I think the lunch is amazing. It's also actually the only meal that I take here.
Yeah.
But I really love to take lunch here because I think there's a lot of options in terms of hot food, warm food, or just sandwiches, soups and everything like that. And salads, fruits. The breakfast is quite good as well. Dinner, usually not my favorite, but I think they improved a lot compared to like when I started living here, because I've been practicing here for 10 years now. And before there was a different restaurant and it was a lot less good.
That's where I remember. It was a buffet restaurant.
Yeah, it was actually in the hotel here, in the at the end of the...
At the end of all.
In the hotel restaurant, there was like a different area where the athletes could eat. So it was a lot of different... It was not only badminton, it was like cycling, handball, volleyball. It was a few different sports. And it was like mass production, like these big buffet things. So the quality is never really amazing.
I remember that, yeah.
I think they improved a lot because I also think they put a lot of time in the food they make. So there's a chef here who's like pretty innovative with his dishes and his recipes. So I think they put a lot of time into it, and that's visible in the quality as well.
Yeah, great.
But yeah, I very rarely take dinner here. I just eat at home.
Yeah.
It's cheaper, easier, better.
And it's in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Ruben, let's start off just with how you started playing badminton. We've heard from a few guests from the Netherlands, including some of the coaches here in the national program. But how did you get started?
It's actually due to my older brother. I have a younger sister who's playing as well. And I have an older brother who used to play as well. Because when I was young, I used to be a tennis player. So I was practicing tennis, I think, 4 times a week when I was like 7, 8 years old. I was pretty serious, but my brother played badminton and I went to his club and just joined, took a racket, and then like you play a little bit in between his matches when he was playing and just for fun. And I thought like, okay, maybe I should apply as well at the club and just start practicing a bit. And then I felt, maybe also due to my tennis, that I had a little bit of an advantage and more talent maybe than the other people from my age. And from there on, I just went on to play more and more and more. And then at some point I had to make a choice, like, do I continue tennis? Do I continue badminton? And then I chose badminton because I just thought it was quicker, faster, more explosive. And tennis was just more frustrating because I couldn't hit as hard as I wanted. And with badminton, I could hit as hard as I could and still didn't hit it out. Stuff like that made me like badminton more. And from there on, it's like probably the same for everyone. You feel that you're a bit better than the rest. And then you start playing these local tournaments, you're winning. And then that goes on to the national tournaments. And then from there on, you just roll into like the whole badminton world, actually, to call it like that.
Yeah. So in badminton, you said that because maybe of tennis, you already picked up some of the skills quite early with the hand-eye coordination as well. Were you kind of one of the juniors that was kind of always on the top each year? Yeah.
Yeah. I, since like under 11, I was winning the national junior tournaments. Mm-hmm. And then from under 13, the national championships and stuff like that. I was always one of the, up to like under 15, I always won it really easy. So I won like singles, doubles, mixed always. I actually won that in under 11, under 13, under 15, under 13, 15, 17 and 19. And that was very important to me that I always wanted to be like three-time
champion.
National champion in my age group. And especially in the under 19, because there's like the this special trophy where your name gets it's carved in the trophy. Mm. But when I was under 19, I didn't play singles anymore in practice or internationally. So that was a tough one, but I managed to win it. And that was very important to me. And I was very happy with that back then.
Who did you beat in the final?
Alex Vlaar. The last few years he played for Bulgaria.
Okay.
Mm. Mixed doubles. That name sounds familiar.
Yeah, with Maria Mitsova, he played mixed doubles.
Okay.
Because his mother is Bulgarian.
Okay, great. So looking back now, tennis, badminton, do you still get on the tennis court now?
Rarely.
Or just every time?
I like to play tennis.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, if I have to choose like tennis or have a badminton, then I have golf, then I like to cycle as well. I have a racing bike. And then also tennis, then there's, it's get
many.
Too much. Like, I need to get some rest as well sometimes.
They need some new event like the decathlon, but all those sports, then you're good to go.
But that sounds too hard. That's physically
At least you'll
demanding.
Have a head start. You're already trained for it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe in the future when I quit badminton.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. So in terms of your career so far, we usually talk about some major milestones, whether they be something that you won that gave you a lot of motivation, or maybe there was a bit of a setback or a challenge that you got advice from a coach, or you had to really learn more about yourself or something like that. Do you have any points in your career where you thought, oh, wow, that was a very important part of my career so far?
I think it's like a bit of a cheesy answer in terms of that, like everything contributes to where you are now. But when I was after the Rio Olympics, I started to play men's doubles with Jaco Arendt. And he went to the Olympics in mixed doubles, and he was like kind of a player that I always looked up to when I was a small, younger player. So that was pretty special for me at the start. And actually in our first tournament, the first tournament we played was the Dutch Open. We made it to the semi-final and we actually beat some good couples. That was kind of when I thought like, okay, I can really go far in this world of badminton. That partnership, I think, really developed me a lot in multiple areas. So in terms of if he was the first one I played some bigger tournaments with. So, you know, there's some like the All England is a special tournament. He was the first one I played it with. And I was like, whoa, this is cool. So it's all these first steps into like the real badminton world I took with him.
Yeah.
And he really coached and helped me a lot in the mental part of the game, because he was like, it was quite handy that he was he has a master's degree in psychology as well. So he was the right guy to teach me those things. And then maybe the biggest learning part for me has been when he quit. Quit like super unexpected, but it came, a little bit of a surprise for me, because we just started the qualification period towards Tokyo in 2019. Mm-hmm. And we traveled to like 10 countries in 3 months or something. And it was from China to the US to Azerbaijan, Brazil. It was a lot of countries. And then he said like, yeah, I can't do it anymore. And I don't believe in it anymore. And I'm done. And that was a surprise for me. So I went from trying to qualify for the Olympics to having no partner for a while, and then starting with Thies, who was still very young and very inexperienced and didn't really show his full potential yet. So we had to start at the bottom again. And that was quite tough, of course. And the biggest change was probably that from being the young and maybe the one who had a bit more, like he could do what he want, I was the older guy in the partnership and really had to help my partner grow and develop. And yeah, that was quite tough and still is sometimes tough. But I think he and I managed to do that really well. And we also made some results that maybe in the beginning we never thought we could. So it really made us believe that we have the ability to go really, really far and really try to make it to the Olympics, which is our biggest goal.
Great. I think this is piggybacking on the topic that we spoke to your teammate Selena about.
Yeah.
And her changing partners, and then Gronje as well, she's in the same boat.
Yeah.
And because they're both more on the more senior side, so playing with younger players, I'd love to hear your perspective. When you were the younger player and Jaco was the older player, did you feel a lot of pressure to meet expectations, and you thought, oh, this is a really good opportunity, I've got a really good partner? And how did you kind of overcome that? And what did Jaco do to potentially make you feel more comfortable, even though there might have been more pressure for you to perform?
Yeah, I think he was like, personally, he was already like a super calm and collective guy and very relaxed. And he was just an easygoing guy. And that really helped me. And he really comforted me in terms like, we are just starting this and no pressure and just play. And I know what you can do. And he really tried to give me confidence that I was a really good player. And I think that helped me a lot. And that was maybe something that I'm also a bit less good at myself. So for me, it was maybe I feel that I put a bit more pressure on my part on Thies when he started with me than Jaco did at me. But yeah, it's almost a different world you step in when you go on from playing these small European events where it's almost for fun. Yeah, it sounds a bit weird, but that's a bit how it feels. And then making this step to playing these tournaments that you always used to watch on YouTube, and seeing the players that you really look up to and suddenly you have to play against them. And at some point, they don't expect you, but they hope that you can maybe beat them. And I feel that the step to really go there and just dare to show what you can do and not be afraid of also failing maybe once or twice or 10 times in those matches, but really just trying to show your own potential. I think that's really important when you start to play with an older partner, that you're not collapsing in terms like, oh shit, I really have to play like this or like that, or he or her expects me to do this or that. I think if you do that, there's a reason they chose you, because they see some potential in you. And that's because you play a certain playing style, or it can be numerous things. But as soon as you really change and just think like, oh, I have to play this way or this way, that's maybe actually when you fail. Not once, but fail every time. So I think it's very important that as an older player, you have to comfort your partner that dare to play their own game and not only look up to you and think like, oh, you're so good and you're doing everything perfect and I suck at everything. And I think that's really important, that you have to believe in yourself. There's a reason you got the chance to play with this good player. So just show yourself and try to do as good as you can. I don't know how you have experienced that, like, because your women's doubles partner has quit and then you're also starting from scratch.
Yeah. I guess what you say about how Jaco, like, tried to build your confidence more, that's probably something that I haven't, like, thought about as much. Like, to me, when I guess, like, I'm trying to help the younger ones, it's more like, how can I technically help them or coach them in a way, but it's not in that confidence way. That never, like, crossed my mind as much. So I think that's...
Yeah, because I think confidence is extremely important on the court. Like, if you can maybe feel that in practice you are doing okay, but if you're going on court, you're very insecure and don't really believe in the game, it's so tough to play. And then you lose the first few points and then it's like, oh yeah, you see, we're not there yet and blah, blah, blah. But that's actually a funny story about the Orleans Masters. We hadn't won a tournament yet, me and Thies, apart from the Nationals. Mm-hmm. But before the week started, I said, like, we have to believe that we can win this tournament. Because I thought we actually could. Like, we were playing well, training was going well. We have to believe that we can win this tournament. We don't have to just say like, ah, maybe, blah, blah, blah. I think we have to dare to say we can win this thing. And then he said like, yeah, you're right. Don't just pretend like you believe, but really believe. Like, really believe you can. And it doesn't mean that when I say I'm going to win the world championships, that I'm going to win it, because it has to be a bit realistic, of course. But if you looked at the draw, there was a few couples that we could have a lot of trouble with, but I believed we could beat. But you have to, the confidence has to be there. And we were confident that week. And I think that really helped us, because we sucked in the first match. We almost lost to a pair from Italy, where we would say like, yeah, we should beat them like comfortably. And we almost lost because we were totally not prepared in the right way. And we were like, oh, we were so confident, la, 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 la. But then the second match, we played so much better after we had some talk, like, we have to do this more, this more, this more. And then the confidence is growing and you see that the game is really, like, growing as well. And that's, I think, the same when you start with a new partner. If this partner gets the feeling that he or she is really, like, not good enough, then it's pretty likely that in matches... that's going to show as well that this person doesn't feel comfortable on court. Mm. I think Jaco was quite good at telling me actually how good I was in some things, where I thought like, okay, yeah, maybe I am actually really good.
Yeah.
And it made me believe a bit more in myself. And I think that was quite helpful for me.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's also because you're the senior one. Like, if Thies went to you and said, Ruben, I think we can win this.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's completely different than when you tell him, because you're helping him, you're the older and more experienced player.
Yeah.
And I guess, Gonya, from your point of view, maybe you didn't think about the confidence and you think more about the coaching and actually training and fixing stuff at training, when sometimes it is just really about showing them that you believe. And if you show that you believe, because you're the senior player, all of a sudden they'll believe as well, because they're like, oh, she believes. That means it's possible.
Yeah, the belief in general, like, not only from your partner, but also from a coach, or if you get the feeling that people believe in you, it also just makes you, it automatically builds confidence, and it automatically builds like that you also believe in yourself, I think. So I think the coaching part is obviously super important. Like if your partner does certain things wrong, yeah, you shouldn't ignore them.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's the main part of the game, of course. Otherwise you can't build confidence if you suck, like generally. But I think if you really can help them also start believing in themselves, like it can do wonderful things.
Ruben, now you are focused mainly just on the men's doubles, is that right?
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
So in terms of men's doubles versus mixed doubles, did you have a choice to make there, or were you always leaning more towards men's because of your playing style, because you enjoy it more? Or
I used to play both,
yeah,
but the men's doubles has been the priority, like for the last, actually maybe since I started playing with Jaco, it has been more of a priority.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like it more, so that's helpful. But I think it's, I don't know if it's my quality, because the coach have told me, I think you could be a great mixed doubles player, but I also just prefer the men's doubles over the mixed doubles.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, not that I don't like playing together with a woman or something, but
yeah.
it is different.
Mm.
Like the communication is different, and it's just different. And maybe I'm just not the best at that. And I think it's better to just like admit that or something, or just like realize that and then go on to a different category. I'm actually still entering in the tournaments in the mixed doubles with Cheryl together.
Okay.
But yeah, it's very hard to get into the big tournaments when you have no ranking.
Yeah, that's right.
When we have the same schedule, which is quite a lot of tournaments, then we just enter. And if we get in, then we play.
Yeah.
Also just maybe to get used to the hall a bit more and then stuff like that. So, But it's not the focus for both of us.
Yeah. So in terms of your, this is going off on a bit of a tangent here, but in terms of your living situation, we do know that you live with Mark, a men's singles player. He told me how to pronounce his name properly yesterday, but I've forgotten.
Kolyao.
Kolyao.
Yeah.
So in terms of that, living with him, you said you've lived with him for 7 years in a home environment. So there might be some listeners out there who are wondering what happens at home. Is it a lot of badminton talk? Is it... Because obviously he's in a relationship with Lena
at the women's player.
So is it just badminton all the time? Or?
No, it's not all the time. No, of course not. Because we also enjoy other things in life. But of course it's a topic that comes up like often. And it could be a lot of things. Like it can be about badminton specific things, like in terms of like how do you play there, blah, blah, blah. But it could also be about the more like the... setup that we have here, like what can we improve in this area in our training environment, or yeah, it could be about other players. Like it can be about a lot of things, of course, that you talk about, but it's obvious that badminton is a topic that comes up quite often when you put two players together in a home for almost 8 years now, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, maybe I can ask, I guess, what's it been like with your sister kind of then getting integrated into the national team and training with her more, traveling with her?
Yeah, it's actually since this year, I would say that we travel more together, because she used to play maybe then a bit lower grade tournaments, but now she's also starting to play the bigger ones.
Now, just a quick word from our sponsors. The Badminton Podcast is brought to you by Volant. Volant was first born out of our frustration with the confusing, bright and unsightly clothes and equipment that we saw in the badminton world. But now it's so much more than that. Our mission is to accelerate the growth of badminton by providing players with products that enhance their love for the sport. All in all, it's high quality gear that makes you look and feel great on and off the court. So make sure you check us out at volantbadminton.com and follow us on our socials at volantbadminton.
For me, it's not very special like in the daily life, because we are so used to it that it's normal for us. But actually, when we were in Indonesia and at the opening dinner and we were taking a picture together, I was like, yeah, it's actually... then you just realize it a bit. It's quite special that, yeah, both of us get the chance to live this life and travel the world to practice our sport. That's quite special. But I would say in our daily life, it's not something we discuss or something. Yeah. At home, like with our parents or our brother, we also have an older brother then. Of course, it's also sometimes about badminton, but it's not that we like, oh, it's so cool that we both can do this, but it's sometimes when you realize that it is special, but it's just daily life for us.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Do you feel you have to like take care of her or anything when you travel or training or not?
Not really, to be honest. Like she had a period where she was struggling mentally, where I maybe should have done that even more or a bit more. But I think right now she's in a good spot and she's old and wise enough to just live her own life as well. And she lives about 1.5 kilometer away from me or 1 kilometer away from me. So if there's something, we can always just walk to each other or bike to each other, which we like to do here in the Netherlands, to just talk or have a dinner together. That's easy. I don't feel like I have to take care of her, no.
All right, and going back to your men's doubles game, you're definitely climbing up the ranks. You won the Orleans Masters bronze medal at the Europeans. In terms of maybe the gap between yourself and, say, the world's best, so yeah. I know you played Li Yang Wang Chilin recently as well, got Olympic gold medalist. So for you and Thies, what do you think is the biggest points that you need to improve in your match to compete?
Against Li Yang and Wang Chilin in Malaysia, it was a lot
yeah.
of points.
And so, yeah, so were Yik and Aaron Chow as well, yeah.
Yeah. An example, what happened in Malaysia was they are obviously a very good pair that's in the first place, but there was a lot of drift in Malaysia, like absolutely insane. And we just couldn't control it. And they really changed their game plan according to the drift. And we were just overwhelmed by that. So on one side, we couldn't lift because it went out. And on one side, we all actually couldn't hit it past halfway the court because it was just so much wind. So they were putting so much pressure at the net, and then you have to play it so tight, that's just really hard. And we were not confident enough to really still dare to play the lifts and play a bit from the defense sometimes, or try to step up ourselves quicker. So I would say adapting to conditions is something we can really improve on. And then I would say defensive. If you just look at the men's doubles right now, it's absolutely insane how much they hit back. Yeah. And that's something we are okay in, but not as good as them for sure. And then consistency is also maybe the most important thing. I think we can play really well sometimes. Like in Indonesia, we played against Chia and So in the second round, and we played a great first set, lost it still, played a really good second set, won it, but then lost the third set with very little score, like single digit, like 21-6 or something, because we just couldn't keep it up. So there's definitely a few areas where we still really have to improve to compete with top 20, top 10, top 5 pairs even. Yeah. Like it's just so hard.
Yeah. What did you find? So when you were playing with the drift, they were putting a lot of pressure on you forwards.
Yeah.
So you couldn't lift easily.
Yeah.
When you swap sides, what did they do in that position when they couldn't hit to the back? Did they press forward as well?
Yeah. The game is actually a bit the same, because on one side you can't lift because you hit it long, and on one side you can't lift because you hit it too short. So both sides actually require just to close the net to make sure that you force the other ones to still play the lift. So they will either hit it long
or short,
or they will hit it short and you can kill it. And we just didn't find the spaces because they did it. They dared to do it also a lot better than us. We were maybe a bit uncomfortable. We also didn't have our best day. And then that combined with the fact that you play against really tough opponents, it makes you insecure on court. And then it just gets so tough to keep up the level. Mm. And they just killed us. Actually, it was, I don't really have another word for that. And they just, yeah, it had been a while that I felt that we got so much under pressure in almost every rally. They just kept pushing. And when we blocked it, he was there. When we played it flat, he was there. So it felt like we didn't have any openings in there. We just didn't see the openings.
Yeah. But then you felt that they could find the opening with you.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, they saw. And that's the thing. Then you feel there's no space on their court. And your court feels like 20 meters wide and 30 meters long because they can play it everywhere. That's a bit of the feeling that you get into on that court. Honestly, it was just super frustrating. It's super frustrating because you prepare for a match well. Like we made a good analysis. We watched a lot of video and you go in with a certain game plan and then you start. And like from the get-go, it was very, very tough for us to play the rallies. And when you don't play rallies, it's also really hard to find touch on court. And you're like, We're not getting into our game. And what should we do? And then that gets frustrating. You make more mistakes. And that's just a downward spiral you get into. After the match, I also said, like, we also just have to accept that we were just not good enough. We are not good enough yet to play under these conditions on a day like this. We're just not good enough to... They're just better than us on a day like this. And we have to accept that. And we know that and we have to work on it. And the only way to get closer is to work even harder during practice and try to do better next time.
But how hard is it to work on that in practice when you can't create a really big hole here or the drift or the wind? Do you think it's...
Yeah, it is. It's really hard.
It's hard, yeah.
Yeah, it's super tough. Like it's almost impossible actually, like in terms of sparring, like we don't have a couple here that's better than us. So that's already hard. But then in terms of conditions, that's even the next step. Actually, between the tournaments in Indonesia and Malaysia, we practiced with the Malaysian national team. There was maybe, the Taipei team was there as well, actually. I think there was maybe 10, 12, maybe even 15 men's doubles couples that were even or better than us. And it's just such a different training environment. Like there was also a bit of aircon in the training hall. So there was a little bit of drift sometimes. And it was so much different. So different from what we are used to here. And stuff like that are things that we are looking for to really make that next step. Practice with those guys in Malaysia. We are trying to practice with the French guys sometimes. We are actually going to the south of France to practice with the Popov brothers before the Worlds. So we're just trying to find different environments to still get that good sparring at least. And hopefully that will help us also to do better in the future. Probably in Australia, that's a problem that's present as well for the top players/pairs. It is just really hard to simulate the same amount of pressure that you would experience when you play against these guys in the tournaments.
Yeah. At least there's females, there's always the boys that you can play against, but being the best boy, you have to go overseas pretty much.
Yeah, it's almost the only way to get that sparring.
Yeah. And a different country for us is hours and hours away.
Yeah. You're pretty secluded from the rest of the world. That's true. Yeah. That's a bit easier in the Netherlands. Like France is a 1 hour flight. Denmark is a 1 hour flight. Germany is a few hours by car. So it makes it easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then in the men's doubles, where do you see the men's doubles event kind of moving into the future? So I guess moving back to, say, the earlier days, there was usually a pretty much the top pairs had more of a front court and more rear court player. But in my opinion, we're probably seeing that the men's doubles is more, both can play really well in both. I think there's always going to be a preferred position.
Yeah.
But the front court players are also very, very strong in the rear court. What do you see in terms of the way that men's doubles is going to progress? Do you think the way that the game is going to change at all?
Yeah, I think it's something I've been thinking about myself also, where I'm like, what is actually different now compared to like 10, 15 years ago? Because that's when I started watching men's doubles with like Koo Kim Kyat, Tam Bun Yong, Bowen Mogensen, Jung Jae Sung, Leung Dae.
Yeah.
Those pairs, what's different now? And I feel the service situation has gotten a lot more important before. Apart from maybe Bo Mogensen, a lot of the Asians just played it in and get the rally going and then attack, take over. Then the other ones go. And that was just like part of it was impressive to see because there was a lot of changeovers. And I feel it was also because there was a real rear court player and front court player indeed. And now a lot of pairs are more all round. And if you look at, for instance, Asan and Setiwan, they sometimes just kill a game. Like there's almost no rallies.
Yeah.
Because they're just so good at first three shots. It was the same with Kevin and Marcus, that there was a point where it was very tough to get out of the service situation against them. And then they won, I don't know how many tournaments in a season. That was pretty scary. Where I feel now, again, we are going to a bit more longer rallies. Maybe also because I feel at the bigger tournaments, the shuttles are extremely slow most of the times. So a lot of pairs are just like, if we go into the serve battle with Kevin, then we're losing. So let's just play a lift and play from the defense. I think a lot of people saw that from Endo and Watanabe, where they actually won from the defense, which is remarkable. Like their defense was also
crazy good.
Insane. Yeah. But they saw that it worked to maybe play these longer rallies. And I think that makes the game also a bit more even, because you see there's a lot more different pairs winning tournaments now. Like, there was a while there where it was only Kevin and Marcus winning, and they were playing against the Japanese a lot in the final, or the Chinese pairs. And now you see the younger Indonesian pairs. I think Alfie and Ardianto, they're really in top form at the moment. But there's not one that's really, really sticking out at the moment. And that's, yeah, that's quite interesting, I think. It's interesting to see a bit of, yeah, maybe not new faces, but different faces on the podiums, all the tournaments, but how it's progressing in terms of the game. Yeah, as I said, it's the longer rallies. Again, I feel due to slower shuttles, there's a lot more defensive rallies also, where people really are just like, yeah, I'm just going to play it up and see from there, because we're going to hit it back anyway. That's a bit what I feel has happened in the last 2-3 years, where people are so keen to just defend. It's no problem, especially the Japanese. They're just put it to the backcourt and defend. And from there, we'll see if we get a chance, we take over and let's go.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So
stuff for her to put input on a men's doubles category.
Yeah, I'll just, we'll see if there's any thoughts or anything like that. Okay, let's move on to golf now. So you are a keen golfer.
You're finally
to talk about this.
What I've been waiting for.
So what's your golfing schedule look like in amongst your full-time badminton?
Schedule. Do you have a schedule?
No, I don't. No, it's
when the sun's out.
Yeah, it's really dependent on the period we're in and the weather. Mm-hmm. Also, of course, when it's raining, I'm not going out. Like, that's pretty apparent. Like, I really want nice weather. But I would say I try to play slash practice in just a regular practice week, like 2 times a week, maybe. And then maybe in the weekends, but that's mostly either 9 holes or just a practice, like training, because that's become a lot less. And when I started, I was like literally every day, like after practice, I went to the driving range here and started practicing, because for the people not knowing, the golf course is literally on the center here. So it's very easy for me. But now that has become a bit less. But now, for instance, I had a 2-week vacation and I played every day, like 14 days straight. So when I have the time, I really like to go. We also played, there was a day in Indonesia where we had an off day. And then I played with Marvin Seidel, who's really good at golf, actually.
Oh,
yeah, and Oliver Babich, the cameraman from Anders Antonsen. So that's also fun to do, like play with some other players. And that's, I really like to do that as well.
Yeah. So when you were playing every day, is that by yourself or with friends? Or
no, by myself.
By yourself. So what do you enjoy about golf? Is it you're outdoors? Is it, it's a bit slower? It's a bit time to think? It's relaxing? Or
yeah, for me, it's in the first place, the reason I could do it is also why, because it's not very physically demanding. Mm-hmm. Like if it would be, it would be very hard to combine with a full-time training schedule. The thing I really enjoy is being outside indeed. So the outdoors theme is something that's very appealing to me. And then it was totally new. So it was something new that I picked up and I was just really bad at. And I really wanted to become better. And it was something, it was movements that I never made. And it was just something I really wanted to, something totally new that I'd never done before that I would like to improve in. And then when I started becoming a bit better, I became a member at the club here and then I met some guys here. So it was also a bit of a social thing. Yeah. And now I just like to go out here with the guys, so which are friends now. Just go out on a course with friends. You have a chat for either 2 hours or like 1.5, 2 hours or 3.5, 4 hours. Depends if you play 9 or 18 holes. And for me, that's just a great way to relax and get thoughts out of my mind and not being busy with badminton or anything, but really being busy with, I want to hit this golf ball in the right way. And it's just a totally different mindset. And that's what I really like. That's what I really like.
I heard
love.
Love. I heard Jenno Jorgensen's a good golfer as well.
Yeah, I never played with him, but I spoke about golf with him.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's definitely a good golfer. Yeah.
The Danes seem to love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty popular in Denmark.
I think I saw Lin Dan play golf. Maybe that was just for a photo.
Yeah, I think he plays. Yeah, I think he plays, like Go Liu Ying is also playing golf. And there's actually numerous badminton players playing golf. But I would expect that they have a bit less time to play in Asia if they practice like 8 hours a day or something. And then it's
so hot as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we played in Jakarta, it was I was soaked, like literally, like if I did a badminton practice, completely soaked in sweat. That was a bit uncomfortable, actually.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, for the listeners out there, I'm actually going to go play with Ruben in a few hours.
Oh, really?
So in 2 hours and 35 minutes, tee off's at 5:36 on the dot. So then what's next for you? What's next for Ruben and Thies or yourself in terms of badminton?
Just in the near future, it's the World Championships and the Japan Open. So we are now preparing here for those two events. Mm-hmm. So we are departing to Japan, I think, 17th of August, then playing the Worlds there and then going on to the Japan Open. And then after that, it's just regular tournament schedule, league matches. But for sure, our main target is the Olympic qualification period starting in like May 2023.
Yeah. To be clear, the Dutch Olympic Federation have a strong...
Stricter
regulation to qualify. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true, but that's not applying for the doubles because the doubles is already the top. It's only 16 pairs. Mm. But for the singles...
Top 20, I think, Mark.
Yeah, so. Top 20. It's top 20. Mm. Where like if it would be the normal rules... there would be like zero stress for him to qualify.
Yeah.
But with this rule, it's, I think before Tokyo, he was number 17. And it used to be top 16 that he had to be in. So the rules like got a bit easier. So if the rules would have stayed the same, he wouldn't even have made it to the Tokyo Olympics. So it is tough, but it's mainly because like for a small country that we are, we are pretty successful in a lot of sports. Like I think we were number 7 on the Olympics medal table, which is quite impressive for a small country.
So
there's so many successful athletes here in the Netherlands that they also expect us to be successful in badminton, and it's just really freaking hard work.
Yeah,
it's really hard in an Asian dominated sports.
And so with Tokyo, you kind of did a little bit of the qualification period, is that correct?
Yeah.
So I guess from your experience from that, are you looking forward to this qualification period or are you a bit scared about how intense it is?
I think I'll be
not much
more
golf.
Relaxed in terms of that. When we went into this qualification period, I put a lot of pressure on us, like, we have to do well now.
For Tokyo, you're talking about?
Yeah, for Tokyo, yeah. But now I feel the most important thing is actually it's every tournament is just the same. It's the same tournament. Mm. So you just have to play. And I'm a strong believer in if we are good enough, we will make it one way or another. If we're not doing well in this tournament, we'll do better in this because you can't do well in all 20 to 30 tournaments that you're going to play that year. So if you have a bad start, it's not the end of the world. But I also realized that there is a possibility that it could be my last chance. That's also what I realized. So yeah, I'll definitely be more calm in terms of pressuring, like we have to do well from the start, but of course I'm also human and I'm nervous and I really want to make it there. It's going to be hard and there's going to be nerves, there's going to be pressure, but I also told Thies and we're going to tell that ourselves that if we can say after the period that we have tried as hard as we could, then we can be satisfied if we've made it or not. Then we can decide or we can conclude like we were just not good enough. That can be a tough, it can be something tough to say, but if that's the reality, then that's reality. And that's top sport, that's top athleticism. Mm-hmm. So,
how do you handle like long weeks away traveling for tournaments? Are you okay with it? Do you start to hate
I don't have a girlfriend, so that maybe helps. It's true. Like if there's someone at home really waiting for you, that could be harder. Like I feel that with Thies sometimes that could be tougher. Mm. But I actually like being on tournaments. It depends where you are, of course. And it depends if there's COVID or not, because when it was COVID, it was terrible to be even away for 5-6 days. Mm. But this Asian trip, we've been away for 3.5 weeks and it was, I really liked it. I think for you, it's just a bit because mostly like when you travel here, you're away for maybe like 1.5 months or something, or maybe even longer. It could be longer sometimes even. Yeah. And I don't know how I would handle that. I think it can be really tough, but that's maybe a question I would ask you, like, how do you handle that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think it depends, like, how many people we have with us as well. Like, if it's a big team, if we have coaches sometimes. Like, before it was just me, Seriana, maybe one other player, like a singles player. And, yeah, by 1 month, you're kind of like, oh.
Want to kill each other.
Yeah, it's just not as fun, right?
No, definitely.
And it's such a long time and you're just, that like, it's all badminton and, yeah, if you're not enjoying outside of it, it's just a lot of time that's not fun.
That's also a big, like, advantage. Like Mark, for instance, like, I live together with him and he's one of my best friends. Robin is one of my better friends. So if we wouldn't be there chilling or hanging out, we would be at home doing the same thing, actually. So that's also a bit of an advantage, I feel, that if you go well with and actually tease as well, like, we are totally okay with each other for 4 weeks or 3 weeks in a hotel room. So that makes it a lot easier as well. I can imagine if you are not on the same level, social wise or on a personal level, then it can be really tough, actually, to be out there for a long time. Mm. I've seen the Asians traveling, like, I think it was quite a few countries that were in Europe last October. So yeah, it was like Denmark and all these tournaments up to the Worlds. So they were away from home for
2-3 months.
Over 3 months. Somewhere, I was like, okay, that's maybe a bit too long for me. Yeah. That would be really long. Yeah. Three months.
Yeah. I think the Europeans especially like to come home a lot.
Yeah, because we're used to it also. Because like all the Asian tournaments were 2-3 weeks and then back home. Yeah. And then in Europe, we also, like, when it's Denmark Open, I go home in between the tournaments because the travel is just short. Mm. But when you always have to travel so far, you can't do that. Mm. So, yeah, it's normal for us.
Okay. So, Ruben, for those listeners out there who want to follow and see how you're going, what's the best way that they can stay in touch with what you're doing?
Well, I'm not extremely active on Instagram, but I try to be. So it's definitely my Instagram, which is just my name. So it's easy. Great. To follow.
We'll put Ruben's Instagram handle in the podcast description, so make sure you follow him. But for myself, my co-host here, Gronja, and all the listeners out there, I just want to say thank you, Ruben, for coming on to this episode.
Yeah, thank you for being here. It was nice.
So from Henry and I at the Badminton Podcast, thanks for tuning in to this episode. If you've enjoyed it or found it useful, be sure to share it with your family, friends, teammates, and someone outside your badminton circle too, because with your help, we can show the world how incredible badminton is.
To keep up to date with new episodes and who we're interviewing next, make sure you connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at The Badminton Podcast, and on Twitter at The Badminton Pod. Feel free to contact us and ask any questions, give us feedback, or request topics for future episodes. We love hearing from you. And remember to check out and shop for your simple and minimalist badminton gear at volantwear.com. Catch you on the next episode. Bye. Bye.